It is well known that the city of Providence had enormous influence on H.P. Lovecraft, and that he had difficulty spending long periods away from the city. Less well known is the role that this small courtyard played in his work. Begin the tour at the monument to Lovecraft. We'll use his language to explore the hidden horrors that lurk in even the most seemingly pleasant of courtyards. Old Providence. It was this place and the mysterious forces of its long, continuous history which had brought him into being, and which had drawn him back toward marvels and secrets whose boundary no prophet might fix. Here lay the arcana, wondrous or dreadful as the case might be, for which all his years of travel and application had been preparing him. For this place could be no ordinary city. It must have formed the primary nucleus and center of some archaic and unbelievable chapter of Earth's history, whose outward ramifications, recalled only dimly in the most obscure and distorted myths, had vanished utterly amidst the chaos of Terran convulsions long before any human race we know had shambled out of apedom. Furtiveness and secretiveness seemed universal in this hushed city of alienage and death, and I could not escape the sensation of being watched from ambush on every hand by sly, staring eyes that ever shut. I could tell I was at the gateway of a region half bewitched through the piling up of unbroken time accumulations, a region where old, strange things have had a chance to grow and linger because they have never been stirred up. Begin to grasp your surroundings in this courtyard. Absorb the atmosphere from Lovecraft's work and words as you attempt to orient yourself. It was in a deep, damp hollow, overgrown with rank grass, moss, and curious creeping weeds, and filled with a vague stench which my idle fancy associated absurdly with rotting stone. It was too much like a landscape of Salvator Rosa, too much like some forbidden woodcut in a tale of terror. The place is not good for the imagination, and does not bring restful dreams at night. There's too much silence in the dim alleys between the trees, and the floor was too soft, with the dank moss and mattings of infinite years of decay. Weeds and briars reign, and furtive wild things rustle in the undergrowth. Upon everything there is a haze of restlessness and oppression, a touch of the unreal and the grotesque, as if some vital element of perspective or chiaroscuro went awry. It was a fearsomely archaic place, and begun to exude the faint miasmal odor which clings about houses that have stood too long. Yet as an mature antiquarian, I almost lost my olfactory disgust in my feeling of menace and repulsion amidst this rich, unaltered survival from the past. Normal beings seldom visited this locality till the state police were formed, and even now only infrequently do troopers patrol it. Wild creatures, there were none. They are wise when death leers close. It seemed a peaceful Arcadian scene, but knowing what it hid, I hated it. We'll now explore the constructions and passageways to the right. Approach the oddly undulating object near the ramp. No recognized school of sculpture had animated this terrible object, yet centuries and even thousands of years seemed recorded in its dim and greenish surface. Walk over to the strange, primitive, ramp-like stairs. Our lanterns disclosed the top of a flight of stone steps, dripping with some detestable ichor of the inner earth and bordered by most walls encrusted with nitre. Climb up the ramp and peer into the low tunnel between these ancient buildings. Garish daylight shewed only squalor and alienage and the noxious elephantiasis of climbing, spreading stone. But look more closely. Then I saw a black aperture, felt a ghoulish wind of ice, and smelled the carnal bowels of a putrescent earth. Before long, tales had begun to circulate regarding the all-night burning of lights here, and somewhat later, after this burning had suddenly ceased, there rose still queerer tales of disproportionate orders of meat from the butchers, and of the muffled shouting, declamation, ringing, clanging, and screaming supposed to come from some very deep cellar below this very place. Climb down from the ramp and walk into the courtyard. Lean over the shrubs on your right to see the odd subterranean constructions and passages. There was a tunnel from this house to a crypt beneath the dance hall church, a crypt accessible from the church only through a narrow secret passage, the north wall, and in whose chambers some singular and terrible things were discovered. Walk further into the courtyard, and look down into the metal grates that bar entry to this underworld. It was the dank, humid cellar which somehow exerted the strongest repulsion. Who can, with our knowledge, think of the Earth's unknown caverns without a nightmare dread of future possibilities? I cannot see a well or subway entrance without shuddering. There was a subtler thing we often thought we detected as we looked closer, a very strange thing which was, however, merely suggestive at most. I refer to a sort of cloudy, whitish pattern on the dirt floor, a vague, shifting deposit of mold or nitre, which we sometimes thought we could trace amid the sparse fungus growths. Now step among the trees and move counterclockwise among them, looking closely at their bark, roots, and branches. The ancient, lightning-scarred trees seemed unnaturally thick and feverish, while curious mounds and hummocks in the weedy, fulgurite, pitted earth reminded me of snakes and dead men's skulls swelled to gigantic proportions. Baleful, primal trees of unholy size, age, and grotesqueness leered above me like the pillars of some hellish, druidic temple. Now carefully approach the low vegetation that is on your left as you face into the courtyard and away from the street. Although it is contained within a small fenced-in area, please be careful. Somewhat near was the abandoned Dutch gardens, whose walks and beds were polluted by a white, fungus, fetid, overnourished vegetation that never saw full daylight. Botanists, too, ought to study the stunted flora on the border of this spot, for they might shed light on the country notion that the blight here is spreading, little by little, perhaps an inch a year. Look up from the flora here at the building itself that looms above you. There was something very obnoxious about a great stone building with only high, narrow slits for windows. The cyclopean massiveness and giganticism of everything about us became curiously oppressive, and there was something vaguely but deeply unhuman in all the contours, dimensions, proportions, and constructional nuances of the blasphemously archaic stonework. We cannot yet explain the engineering principles used in the anomalous balancing and adjusting of the vast rock masses here. Leave behind this mysterious structure and prepare to cross the street. Carefully cross this accursed street, for the traffic can be bad. And note the abysmal tower to your left as you enter the gates. There was one black tower which reached above the trees into the unknown outer sky, but that was partly ruined and could not be ascended save by a well-nigh impossible climb up the sheer wall, stone by stone. We had at once recognized it as a monstrous tower, figuring in the very earliest carvings. Quickly walk past the tower before its looming presence overwhelms, and note your surroundings. The day was warm and sunny, but the landscape of sedge grass and stunted shrubbery became more and more desolate as we passed. Watch out for birds here as you walk past the tower and away from the road. It is vowed that the birds here are psychopomps, lying in wait for the souls of the dying, and that they time their eerie cries in unison with the sufferer's struggling breath. If they can catch the fleeing soul when it leaves the body, they instantly flutter away, chittering in demoniac laughter, but if they fail, they subside gradually into a disappointed silence. Slowly approach the large, tentacled monument of unearthly appearance. It seemed to be a sort of monster, or symbol representing a monster, of a form which only a diseased imagination could conceive. If I say that my somewhat extravagant imagination yields simultaneous pictures of an octopus, a dragon, and a human caricature, I shall not be unfaithful to the spirit of the thing. A pulpy tentacled head surmounted a grotesque and scaly body with rudimentary wings, but it was the general outline of the whole which made it most shockingly frightful. Prepare to exit these environs and enter the city proper, but remember not to disclose too much of what you have seen. In all the world there was none I dared tell. I walked aimlessly south, past College Hill and the Athenaeum, down Hopkins Street and over the bridge to the business section, where a tall building seemed to guard me, as the modern material things guard the world from ancient and unwholesome wonder. Know that others have confronted horrors like these. Sometimes he would take walks through shadowy tangles of unpaved, musty-smelling lanes, where eldritch brown houses of unknown age leaned and tottered and leered mockingly through narrow, small-paned windows. Here, he knew, strange things had happened once, and there was a faint suggestion behind the surface that everything of the monstrous past might not, at least in the darkest, narrowest, and most intricately crooked alleys, have utterly perished. Here cosmic sin had festered by unholy rites, had commenced the march of death that was to rot us all, to fungus abnormalities too hideous for the grave's holding. Satan here held his Babylonish court, and in the blood of stainless childhood the leprous limbs of phosphorescent Lilith were laved. Incubi and succubi howled praise to Hecate, and heedless moon calves bleated to the Magna Mater. Goats leaped to the sound of thin, cursed flutes, and Aegyptians chased endlessly after misshapen fawns over rocks twisted like swollen toads. Moloch and Ashtaroth were not absent, for in this quintessence of all damnation the bounds of consciousness were let down, and man's fancy lay open to vistas of every realm of horror and every forbidden dimension that evil had power to mold. Yet do not be overwhelmed by your experiences here. The most merciful thing in the world, I think, is the inability of the human mind to correlate all its contents. We live on a placid island of ignorance, in the midst of black seas of infinity, and it was not meant that we should voyage far. The sciences, each straining in its own direction, have hitherto harmed us little, but some day the piecing together of dissociated knowledge will open up such terrifying vistas of reality and of our frightful position there, in that we shall either go mad from the revelation or flee from the deadly light into the peace and safety of a new dark age.